Hi everyone, I'm Ashley McManus, Senior Director of Global Marketing at Affectiva, a smart AI company. Welcome to the Human-Centric AI Podcast, where each episode we will interview a thought leader doing cutting-edge work in the AI space. A little bit about us, Affectiva is on a mission to humanize technology. Acquired by SmartEye in 2021, Affectiva created and defined the emotion AI and human perception AI categories. Built on deep learning, computer vision, speech science, and massive amounts of real-world data, Affectiva's technology can detect nuanced human emotions, complex cognitive states, activities, interactions, and objects people use. For over 20 years, SmartEye has developed AI in the form of eye tracking technology that understands, supports, and predicts a person's intentions and actions. By carefully studying eye, facial, and head movement, our technology can draw conclusions about a person's awareness and mental state. Our eye tracking technology is providing new insights for research within aerospace, aviation, neuroscience, and more. Today's episode features our media analytics leaders, Graham Page and Alex Duckett, joined by Two Ears, One Mouth's director, Sarah Gorman. For over 10 years, Two Ears, One Mouth has been using a statistical evaluation and emotionally intelligent observation to drive more informed decision-making and guide some of the world's brightest brands to an even stronger future. Sarah is an experienced researcher who has consistently delivered strategic insight in the areas of brand and communications. Even as the world continues to reopen post-lockdown, it is safe to say that COVID has forever changed the research landscape. Entire methodologies shut down almost overnight, and for qualitative researchers that typically collect data through in-person sessions, there was an accelerated need for virtual alternatives. With the adoption of new technology in a space that has typically remained true to traditional face-to-face interactions, there is of course some reluctance to change and fear of technology replacing need for qualitative researchers entirely. Let's listen in to learn more.
Hello, everybody. I'm Graham Page. I am the Managing Director of Media Analytics here at Affectiva, which is a smart eye company. And at Affectiva and Smart Eye, we're really interested in humanizing technology. And we do an awful lot of work in a number of sectors, including automotive. But the work that my team's responsible for is in media and marketing. And so in the media and marketing space, our work is really focused on helping brands and businesses understand consumers better, and in particular, how they feel, so that they can produce better experiences, better brand communications, and better products for those consumers. So we do an awful lot of work in the marketing and market research industry. And today we'll be talking about how the emotion AI technology that we have is used in one particular part of the market research industry, and that's the qualitative research industry. So I am really pleased to be joined today by two esteemed guests. So we have Sarah Gorman here from Two Ears, One Mouth. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Hi. Hi, Graham.
And we also have Alex Duckett from Affectiva as well. Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Hi. So I will hand over to Sarah and Alex to introduce themselves, and then we will kick off our conversation and talk a little bit about how technology is really changing the qual industry. So Sarah, can I ask you to introduce yourself, please?
Absolutely. Thanks, Graham. So as said, I'm Sarah. I'm a director at Two Ears, One Mouth. We are a boutique research agency based here in the UK. We specialise in brand and communication research, but our clients tend to really like working with us, so we span wider than that across many different fields, including MPD and innovation and customer experience. We're here today to talk primarily about qualitative research, and I've been a qualitative researcher for 24 years. I just counted up just now. I think I started in start of September 97.
Wow, lots of experience. Look forward to hearing some of that. Thank you. Alex, over to you.
Lovely. Thanks, Graham. And hello, everyone. So my name's Alex Duckett, and I'm an account director within the media analytics team here at Affectiva. So I very much have a quantitative analytical background, but my role is very much on making sure our clients get the most out of the emotion AI technology that we have. So client partners such as Sarah, I help make sense of the data that we're delivering, and specifically around the qualitative applications that we're going to talk a little bit about today.
Great, thank you. So I guess we probably better start with a few definitions. We talked about a couple of things. We talked about qualitative research. We talked about emotion, AI technology, just to kind of explain slightly on the former. And again, many of you will know this, but obviously Affectiva's emotion AI technology is a proprietary approach that uses AI to help businesses understand how people feel, primarily by looking at the expressions that they show on their face. And that's used in a number of different fields, as we said at the start. But yeah, I really wanted to also help people understand a little bit by what we mean by qualitative research and what we mean by quantitative research or survey research. So Sarah, perhaps you could take a stab at the unenviable task of explaining the difference between those two things, just so everybody kind of knows where we're coming from.
I will try. I'll keep it very simplistic. And I did this once for a client many years ago. So where quantitative research speaks to a wide number of people, typically in the hundreds, for the trade-off with that is that if you're speaking to lots and lots of people, it becomes very unwieldy and expensive to speak to them for a long period of time. So you have a very focused survey with closed-ended questions generally, very tight so that you can analyse that huge number and make sense of it. What we're doing qualitative is the absolute opposite. So we want to speak to people for quite a long time. So research can be up to 2 hours if we've got a group of people together. But we trade that off by speaking to a relatively small number of people. So our sample sizes are in the tens rather than the hundreds, and typically somewhere between 15 and 50 per project.
When I think of qualitative research, I think typically it's often seen as being able to go very deep and be very flexible in the way that it can kind of always kind of pursue what a participant kind of is saying and really kind of delve into that in some more depth. The quantitative research world that we integrate an Affectiva with a great deal is much more structured and much more fixed in what it can do, as you said. But it's really interesting to be able to work, I guess, with both sides of the research industry. So yeah, want to dig in a little bit more in terms of qualitative. So with that, I mean, I guess the qualitative industry has obviously been around for a long time. Have you got a perspective, Sarah and Alex, on how the role of the qualitative researcher has changed over time? Because clearly, in some ways, it's like a traditional form. In some ways, you're sitting and talking to people often, but obviously, you know, the way we communicate, technology has evolved so much over the last few decades. I'm intrigued to know how the kind of qualitative research industry and the core researcher's role has changed over that time.
I mean, I was thinking about this earlier. From my perspective, to some extent, as you say, it's quite a traditional area of research in that the absolute, if you boil it down to the nuts and bolts, it's talking to people, as you say, in a much more conversational way and finding out what they think and being open to understanding the answers that they come with. And in some ways, it's been touched, I think, less by technology than quantitative. But, you know, we have continued to sort of move as people have. It was always face-to-face because people always gathered face-to-face. When we sort of naturally met with friends and spoke and spent time together. As that has segued online in various digital forms, we have started to explore that in different ways. So sort of 10 years ago, we started to look at doing online discussion forums, so in a text format or utilizing social media, be that sort of in Facebook or WhatsApp and various ways to try and integrate those. So it was more the medium, I suppose, that by which we were communicating with people. I'd still say the fundamental way and the questions we ask is broadly the same. The other thing I was thinking back to when I started 24 years ago, and Qual had a lot more luxury of space and it could be more exploratory. It was done. Nowadays, it's much more focused and much more results driven, which I think is how it should be. Mm-hmm. When I started, you would do a round of Qual simply to design the questionnaire, which is, I know. I mean, my argument now, if you can't write a questionnaire, you shouldn't be in research. You don't need Qual to tell you. So, yeah, that's kind of how I feel. In some ways, it's very similar. But other things have changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just like that aspect that there's something fundamental and enduring, right, about empathizing and understanding people. And that's not going to go away. That's been there and that remains there. And so you think about the skills a qual researcher needs. And when you talk to qual researchers, this is always evident. You know, they're very good at striking rapport and understanding the depth of emotional response that people have around different subjects. And so I think, Sarah, you were talking about how, it's potentially traditional or seen as traditional in some ways. And I think it's because there's that human element that is there and remains there. But then I think, on the other side, like any type of research, any type of data analysis, there is this pressure to, need to innovate, differentiate, and potentially use technology, but use technology where it is going to add value and not for the sake of it. And I guess that's the key challenge, right? It's how do we create better insights for our clients and not just focus on things that are new for the sake of it, but okay, what different types of technology can help add value to that fundamental let's understand people? Mm-hmm.
And I guess as things have moved more, into more digital environments and digital channels, has that impacted on the ability of the qualitative researcher to empathize and to kind of understand, from people's nonverbal signals, how people are feeling and get into some of those deeper territories that we talked about?
Well, I think that was always in some way perhaps one of the key concerns around moving online. So when earlier on we were doing text-based discussion forums, on the one hand, people did seem to feel a bit more free to express mm-hmm. themselves and to be a bit more honest. What you then lose, obviously, is all that sort of body language and understanding the context with which people are saying things, which kind of leads on to the opportunities that the emotional AI can offer when we go back into a face-to-face environment. Mm-hmm. And what's happened in the last 18 months has helped really facilitate that. Yeah. So I think that's the key thing. There was almost a fear that while we were able to interact with people more easily and be there more in the moment for certain things, we were losing some of that context because we were having to take things essentially at face value without understanding the context of how they were saying it. Mm-hmm. I think that was sort of one of the challenges really that we're hopefully kind of innovating our way out of at the moment.
Right, and I'm sure COVID has accelerated a lot of those challenges, right?
Yeah, I mean, you ask anyone in the qualitative research industry, and we've all been saying that we should be doing virtual groups for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. The face-to-face industry and the face-to-face process was so slick and so streamlined that it was sort of easier to just keep doing the same thing, right? You know what it's like. It's just easier to keep doing what we've done before. And then COVID happened and we had no choice but to work out how to do it and to innovate it. And certainly here at Two Ears, our perspective now is that our go-to is to continue online and that we would do so. Our position is that is our approach unless there's we kind of have to have a strong reason to be persuaded otherwise. Mm-hmm. Because outside of the benefits that we can talk about, perhaps in specifically about emotional AI, I mean, I could go on for an hour about how I feel the benefits of it in terms of people feel more comfortable in their own homes. They seem to open up more. They talk to each other more. A bit like, people are perhaps staring at my background and trying to work out what books I've got on the shelf. You're in their own homes and you start to get a sense of that. There's much greater opportunity for diversity and inclusion, and we're seeing that straight away. So there's just loads of benefits that we don't want to lose.
Right.
And we've all had a crash course as well, right? So during COVID, as you mentioned, Graham, it's, to communicate with family and friends, everyone's had to get on board with, joining a Zoom, joining a Teams, whatever it is. So perhaps some people who are a bit reluctant or might have been reluctant have got to grips with it, which means that, that familiarity now exists.
Correct. No, I completely agree. It's we're all much more comfortable with this kind of tech now, and I'm sure that makes a difference. So speaking of technology, though, I mean, obviously, Affectiva and Two Ears One Mouth have done a number of projects together recently. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of those projects and kind of why I guess you've kind of looked to the emotion AI technology to help with those things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did our first project back in January this year. So we've been running for about 9 months now, and we're at the point again where our default point is why not adding emotional AI. So the key reasons for us, I mean, there was a few things. I mean, A, we're always looking to innovate as well and to see what's out there and to trial things. But one of the things that we felt that this would really offer an opportunity to do was to help bridge that gap. So much as I think you were talking about the understanding and perhaps the skills of the qual researcher. It's really easy to kind of see, but really hard to explain what it is. So we all have those moments where we know instinctively that somebody doesn't quite mean what they say, or they're being a bit guarded or perhaps overemphasizing something. But actually trying to explain why we know that is almost impossible. At worst, qual can come across as a bit of a dark art because of this gap between what we see and hear people say in groups and then perhaps what we report back to our clients. And the key thing for us and one of the opportunities was to use the AI to help actually demonstrate those. So I wouldn't say that we typically find brand new insights that we wouldn't have seen before. It's not for that reason, but it's that it's so much easier to show and explain and to demonstrate those. Whereas before, you're basically standing up and going, you just have to trust me on this. And that's why sometimes, you know, qual researchers can be very well thought of when you get a loyal client because they do completely buy into it. But this helps where it's spread out into the wider business, perhaps outside of marketing teams. And also, so many of our clients and the agencies that they work with are very clued up and understanding about, you know, we'll often get questions about, okay, so how are you going to tackle this in system one? You know, what are you going to do to understand that part? And that's the beauty. I mean, I love nothing more now than having that first conversation with a creative agency and the planner saying, so how are you going to address system one responses? And I go, and actually they're genuinely excited about it as well, because they know that their advertising often works through more instinctive responses. So there's really been a lot of benefits. It's always been responded to very positively from our clients. And in fairness, they're paying for it. We're charging for it as an extra service. So it's not something we're lobbing in for free, but they're seeing the value of it immediately and buying it on first projects where they haven't seen the results yet. So it's been fantastic.
Great. It's interesting that you talk about it's about providing a bit of evidence. I mean, I think back to a lot of the qualitative debriefs that I've seen, and you know, the currency of a lot of those debriefs is being quotes and so on. I guess it's really interesting that this is being used, you know, alongside that to then, I guess, illustrate some of the nonverbal cues that have always been really hard to get across, right?
Exactly. And I was thinking back in terms of this conversation this evening. I was reminded of a project I did many years ago for Jaguar, and it was a brand ad to launch a new model. And it was a beautiful, beautiful film, beautiful black and white film with beautiful people in a beautiful location, having a beautiful time. And we interviewed lots of people, and some women just had this really visceral negative emotion to it, negative response. And they literally couldn't verbalize it, but you could see in their faces and the way that they were responding. And there was something, it triggered something really primal in terms of something that had happened in their adult experiences. And they couldn't talk about it, and we couldn't probe. You could tell there was something really personal there. And I remember reporting this back and talking, and the MD asking me, she said, like, well, what is it? And I was like, I really can't tell you. Because it was too personal. And I just, I thought back that if I could have, that would have been so clear. I think there was anger and there was fear in there.
Right.
Sort of really personal experiences. And it would have really helped to be able to kind of show those, to go, I still can't tell you what it was that triggered it. And they're probably different for each of these respondents. But they're having this common response.
Yeah. It would have made it very clear. Now that makes total sense. I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, it would have been helpful on some of that past advertising research. Can you talk a little bit, Alex or Sarah, about the sorts of projects we've worked on? I know we may not be able to share specific results because of client confidentiality, but it'll be perhaps useful for everybody to hear a little bit about the types of work this technology is being used for.
Yeah, I mean, I can. So the first project we worked on was some brand proposition work. So we were showing early stage territories, and getting their responses. And when stuff is at a really early stage, and also something like a territory, is you're putting something in front of consumers that they never typically see in real life. So it's always slightly difficult because you're asking them to respond to something that they're not used to and they wouldn't typically see. And that's where really I sort of say to my clients, I'm not going to try and explain to them fully what it is because they never quite grasp it. I'm just looking for those visceral responses and really understanding how they emotionally react to them, because typically there's an emotional element to a brand proposition. And it just works so clearly, and it worked in such a brilliantly British way, because what we saw was, and Alex kind of uncovered it for me, was seeing these moments of cynicism expressed through humour, which is such a British way of doing it, you know, going, oh, yeah, of course, you know, so you'd see these kind of positive emotions coming up, but actually in the context of what they were saying, it was being used in a really negative way.
Yeah.
And that was perfect in that response, and it really helped underline those that. But I love that kind of duality, that it was they were using humour to express something negative.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we get most value out of this type of technology. It's looking at some of those subtleties. So as you were saying before, Sarah, it's not saying anything radically different to what you would have pulled out, but it just gives a bit of subtlety and a bit of scientific validity to some of those nuances and the nuances of the response. So I know that sometimes you know, people may think, you know, given the word AI is bandied around in the press so much, that you know, our algorithm is going to sort of do the qualitative researcher's job for them. And of course, it's not going to do that, but it's that layer that brings out that subtlety and gives that scientific validity, as I say. So it's the build. It's not the replacement.
And I think that's the perfect. I think actually that example is the perfect example of why, as a qual researcher, I won't be replaced for quite a long time, because the nuance, you know, if you were to just put that through the algorithm and give the results back, that would have come back. And again, you'd look at it and go, oh, look, everyone was really positive there. You know, there was a positive emotion expressed. So actually, that's great. And it wasn't. And so often it's the context of what's been, you know, of how they're saying it. And we do often use, you know, we'll express something negative in a positive way. The other times we've used it is in advertising research. And that's, again, been really helpful. And we're not using it when they're watching the ads, looking at the storyboards. It's actually around the discussion in a typical way. And again, just really uncovering those System 1 responses. And it was interesting because some of the advertising we were showing is potentially quite polarizing. And that was an interesting piece of analysis then, because what you were looking at again on the screen was different people having very different emotions at the same time. So some people absolutely loving it and some people really not liking it at all. So again, that algorithm would have probably sort of flatlined. You know, the simplistic thought that people would think with that algorithm is that it would come out as a flatline, because you add up that and you minus that. But it was so helpful to be able to show that. And luckily our client had told us up front that they were happy with polarization. So we could use it in a positive way. But I definitely think it can be used in much wider approaches. That's just more at the nature of the kind of work we do. I can't really see potentially a discussion subject where it couldn't add something. You're really trying to understand, as you say, kind of how people feel about a subject. Having these responses is always going to be helpful.
Right. No, that's really helpful and a useful perspective. But I did want to pick up one thing you said, Alex and Sarah, just around, I guess, there's almost a sense occasionally that, you know, this might be a replacement for the qual researcher or in some way kind of a bit of a threat to the qual researcher's skill. So, you know, Alex, perhaps you can comment a little bit on kind of some of the barriers that we've seen when we've talked to some qualitative researchers about this technology, because I think sometimes there is a bit of a fear factor here that's perhaps worth us discussing.
Yeah, I think there is. And I think part of it is healthy, right? Because, you know, we're all habitual to an extent in our roles and our processes and how we do things. And so anything new, absolutely you know, it should be scrutinized, and scrutinized through the lens of, well, you know, how is this going to make things better? How is this going to add value? So I think absolutely that there's some scrutiny there around what this is going to add. I think perhaps though, once you then get into the depths of, well, you know, this is actually what we're doing, this is what we're adding, and that, you know, at the heart, all we're doing is simply processing through our AI the recording of the video that you've captured anyway. So there's nothing new that you need to do that will trip you up. It's the processing of the video file through our emotion AI. So there's an ease factor which can overcome, I think, some of that reluctance that you know, or, you know, is this going to be complicated? Is it going to add a layer to setup that I don't want to go through? Because, you know, it should be easy. It should be human, the whole process. So I think there's an ease of getting things going. And then I think the other one we've talked about a little bit already, and that's, you know, is this going to potentially replace what the qualitative researcher is doing? You know, you're trying to deliver data from a qualitative process. And, you know, I don't think anything could be further from the truth, really, because there is a wealth of data that we create. But then when we go about analyzing that, it's in a way in which we can, you know, highlight some of those subtleties that we've spoken about. So it's about, you know, bringing to the qualitative researcher, such as Sarah, oh, look, in this moment, X, Y, and Z were felt, and to this level of intensity, how does that marry up with your analytical process? Is that something that can add a subtlety or add a reinforcement? So I think once you get into the details of what we're actually doing, I think we can overcome some of those barriers. But I think as ever, the value is then seen in the output, mm-hmm. in the debrief of the presentation.
I think sometimes there's, just as you were saying that, Alex, it kind of struck me, and apologies, I don't necessarily have the answer for it, but maybe we should see if we could work it. There's something around the language. So I think if you start mm-hmm. to, because essentially what you have is, as you say, it's data and it's analytics, but that language is so alien to call, because again, we do it instinctively. Mm-hmm. You know, our respondents, our data, what they say is data, and we sit and analyze it. Mm-hmm. But we don't have another language for that, which is back to this sort of slightly black box, dark art element that I think you come up against with qual, because it is the same thing. You're just doing it, you know, you're doing it in different ways. It's funny, we've started to use a machine transcription service, mm-hmm. Which is, and that type of possibility again has been around for about 10 years, and they've all been really poor. And they're starting to get much, much better. That is still a lot of data points to analyze. It's just a transcription of what they've said, mm-hmm. which is what a lot of qual researchers use. So I think it's that it's finding a way of perhaps trying to bridge those differences to understand. But it's just another way of, I think really, there won't be a qual researcher that mm-hmm. hasn't stood up in a debrief and had a difficult time trying to persuade, because mm-hmm. ultimately, you know, we're standing up with our opinions, and that's where you end up with this language. We end up with opinions and our interpretation. And if somebody doesn't want to buy into it, that can be really hard to prove. Mm-hmm. And this is just, you know, and again, as you said, Graham, you know, we'll use quotes or we'll use mm-hmm. clips from the video. And this is just another step on from that, really. Because that was kind of, here's what they said and the way that they looked when they said it. Mm-hmm. And now you're just layering on the next level. But because it always requires the context, I'm not worried about being out of a job. I mean, eventually somebody will work it out, but we've got far bigger problems than whether qual researchers uh-huh. have a career at that stage. Yeah. But until then, yeah.
No, interesting. I mean, it's funny, it always strikes me that it's almost odd in some ways that there may be some fear around this, because, you know, I think qualitative research has traditionally really kind of dealt in understanding people's feelings. And this is absolutely what the emotion AI technology is also doing. So it's not a, you know, it's a real compliment, I think, and a piece of illustration of how people felt, that, as you said earlier, is a powerful thing to show as an illustration of what you were saying, rather than because it's contradicting what a qual researcher might say. So no, I think it may be speak a very different language in some ways, but it's all speaking to the same topic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Look, this has been great. I'm going to close the conversation, I guess, with one final question. And again, Sarah and Alex, you both kind of alluded to this earlier, that the work, I guess, that we've done has tended to be on, you know, brand positioning and advertising, early stage advertising development work. You know, is there any other kind of form of qualitative research or form of research that you think this technology, you know, could or should be used in more widely, having worked with it in the way that you have?
Yes, I mean, I was quite excited when I had, you know, sometimes you just don't get the chance to really think and think, actually, what could it be used for? So we've just won a project for a major retailer who's moving to self-service checkouts. So it's not a grocery retailer. Mm-hmm. It's a clothing and home retailer, and they're moving to self-service checkouts, and they're finding quite low uptake of people mm-hmm. wanting to use them. And so we're going to go in and speak to people. And the classic qualitative way is what I love called observations and intercepts, which is where you kind of hide behind the shelf and peek around the corner and to see what they do. And then when they're finished, you grab them and just have a few minutes and find out what they were doing. And I was kind of thinking that actually, and we have worked ways of doing this, covering all the legalities in the past mm-hmm. in terms of viewing video footage. Mm-hmm. So stores will have security footage likely aimed at the till. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, okay, so we stop, you know, Beryl after she struggled to make it work and had to, you know, mm-hmm. the red light's gone on. And actually just being able to understand those emotions, because she might mm-hmm. tell us that it was a bad experience and mm-hmm. what went wrong. But actually is it fear or is it frustration, or you know, does it tip into anger or is it just a bit of confusion? You know, mm-hmm. I did feel that actually we often talk about understanding feelings at quite an emotional level, but I thought it could quite pragmatically help understand mm-hmm. almost like if you understood whether it was anger versus frustration, you can make a decision, a business decision about, okay, they're a bit frustrated, but they'll do it. Mm-hmm. Or if it's confusion, then you know there's something else going on that maybe can be solved. So that was my kind of... the thought I had in terms of being something really different and not even within a group or a depth context.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Alex?
Yeah, and I guess just to build on that, so from a sort of wider customer experience point of view, we have seen value where, you know, a respondent or a consumer has consented to our tech and then they've just often filmed themselves just for sort of 30 seconds in that Vox Pop style of interaction. We can get a lot from that, right? Of, you know, where someone is grumbling about their morning coffee or getting their car fixed or whatever it might be. Actually, in a short space of time, that can mm-hmm. reveal quite a lot emotionally mm-hmm. and in the moment as well, right? They do it on their phones or whatever it might be. So that can be really, really interesting. And then, you know, it's a step removed from the researcher, but then you can look at it afterwards and then think, okay, that's the language they use, that's what they felt right in the heat of that moment, whatever it mm-hmm. might be. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's really exciting opportunities in that respect. And that's mm-hmm. the good thing about the technology is, you know, my understanding is that so much work through the automotive part has been done to capture that they don't have to be looking perfectly face on. You know, it doesn't have to be perfectly lit. You know, you can cope with quite a lot of reality mm-hmm. And still be able to put it through, which is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I think there's all sorts of applications. Again, obviously, we need to ensure people have got consent and are given consent mm. and so on. But there's all sorts of very real world applications where this can really help understand the experience that people are having. One very final quick question, just in terms of, you know, obviously, I think the partnership's been very powerful so far. Are there any kind of further thoughts on kind of, you know, what the next steps are in terms of the businesses working together?
I think mainly, I suppose, in the ways that just spoke about, actually taking it outside of the group context and seeing, you know, how else it can be used. Because I'm now excited because one of the great things, the other elements that we can do is kind of one of the digital benefits has been to move ethnography into an online and digital context mm-hmm. of people recording themselves, you know, a real value to being private and on their own and capturing things in the moment. So I think the opportunity to then augment that with emotional AI is really powerful because quite a lot of what we're doing in groups and balancing off is asking people to talk in a more hypothetical way or a considered way and thinking of back to that time or if you did mm-hmm. this in the future. We're actually being able to understand the emotions in the moment, I think, could be really, really strong. I'm very excited to kind of explore that.
And then I think from the Affectiva side, I think it's great that having Sarah as a client that just wants to pick up the tech and think, oh, how could this add value here and be really innovative with it? I think it's, you know, it's learning through doing, I think, in this space. So, you know, you've got to sort of try things out and see what they say. And often you don't know exactly what's going to come out. But I think, you know, if, you know, the Two Ears, One Mouth guys are on, you know, on board with doing it, and obviously they get their end clients on board, then it's great to just see what we get, see where it goes, see what insights we can get from it.
Agreed, none. And it's been great working with you, Sarah, and the team at Two Ears, One Mouth. It's been, as Alex says, been really interesting to see what you can do with the technology in this space. So thank you for that. And thank you for taking the time to share it today. So hopefully everybody is interested and fascinated as I have been by hearing those perspectives. So thank you again for your time. Thanks again, everybody, for your time. Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Sarah, so much for the conversation. It's been great. Thanks, everyone. And goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Really cool conversation. So for me, the highlights of this discussion included COVID's impact on qualitative research and what the future will look like for qual, the importance of context, and debunking the fear of the machine. So if you're interested in learning more about Emotion AI for qual, I hope that you'll contact us for a demo to see more of our capabilities. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the Human-Centric AI podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts for new episodes. We're also on social media, so please reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram at Affectiva or at SmartEye to share any feedback you have on the show and weigh in on the discussion using hashtag HumanAIPodcast. Don't forget to rate us and comment with your feedback to help make the podcast more discoverable for others. Until next time, thanks for listening.